We got one more board member that's going to be joining us here, but we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order and get back on the agenda for the regular board meeting. So, Mr. Manager, I think we have some minutes to approve.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I would request you give consideration for approval of your minutes. This is both regular and special meeting minutes of March 25th, 2008, which have been distributed to you for consideration.
How are they distributed? I don't believe I received them.
They were actually mailed, Ms. Savannah, as part of the package.
They were faxed or what?
I got mine faxed.
Mine were faxed.
I didn't receive them. And I hate to say this, but I have had problems with my fax machine in the past. And ink and paper or whatever, sometimes it jams and I have to go down there and deal with it. I apologize, I did not receive a copy.
The board so wishes, Mr. Chairman, these of course can be deferred.
Would you like to hold off or just let the board act?
I prefer that we defer just so I can look them over, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Make a motion that we defer the approval of the minutes until the next regular board meeting, April 22nd.
Second. All right. Motion by Ms. O'Bannon and second by Mr. Donati to defer action on the minutes until our next board meeting on April, in 2 weeks, 22nd. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed no. Then we can do that at that time. Mr. Manager, do you have any comments this evening?
I have no comments this evening, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. How about board members? Any board members have any comments to make this evening?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have one. I want to give my thanks to the Division of Fire and to the EMS Service and to the Volunteer Rescue Squad in Henrico County. This past weekend, my daughter and her husband had an emergency at that house, and they responded very professionally, and they are really grateful. My daughter got me on the phone, and I know the firefighter took over, and he said, "Ma'am, we have to get you in the ambulance, get you, you know, to the hospital." And he was very, very professional. I very much appreciate their assistance in this emergency.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Ms. O'Bannon. We heard that earlier tonight from another constituent. I think it's a great, great operation, a good organization, one I can be proud of. Any other comments, board members, tonight? If not, I'd like to recognize our news media coverage tonight. We have a new reporter from Times Dispatch, Melody Martin. She's Melody. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Mr. Lapis from the Henrico Citizen was here for the public hearing of the budget, and he had to leave. But thank you all for being here. And now, Ms. Manager, we have a number of proclamations this evening, and you want to call those out?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are five proclamations for consideration this evening. The first is a proclamation for Crime Victims' Rights Week, which would be April 13th through the 19th, 2008. I'm going to ask several individuals to come to the podium. Ms. Shelley Schumann Johnson, who is director of our Victim Witness Program in the Commonwealth Attorney's Office. She will be joined by Kristen J. Camp, Marcia Carr, Nikki Johnson, and Nicole Maton, and Programs Assistant Kate Griffin and Susan Haynes. The presentation of this proclamation will be made by Patricia S. O'Bannon, Vice Chair of the Board of Supervisors.
And now we have one copy of the proclamation. Crime Victims' Rights Week, April 13th through 19th, 2008. Whereas 25 million Americans are victims of crime each year, and of those, 5.2 million are victims of violent crime, and whereas a just society acknowledges crime's impact on individuals, families, and communities by ensuring that rights, resources, and services are available to help rebuild lives, and whereas victims' rights are a critical component of the promise of justice for all, the foundation for our system of justice in America, and whereas although our nation has steadily expanded rights, protections, and services for victims of crime, too many victims are still not able to realize the hope and promise of these gains, and Whereas we must do our best to ensure services are available for underserved segments of our population, including crime victims with disabilities, victims with mental illness, victims who are teenagers, victims who are elderly, victims in rural areas, and victims in communities of color. And whereas observing victims' rights and treating victims with dignity and respect serves the public interest by engaging victims in the justice system, inspiring respect for public authorities, and promoting confidence in public safety. And whereas America recognizes that we make our homes, neighborhoods, and communities safer and stronger by serving victims of crime and ensuring justice for all. And whereas our nation must strive to protect, expand, and observe crime victims' rights so that they are truly injustice for victims and justice for all. It truly is justice for victims and justice for all. And whereas Henrico County Victim Witness Assistance Program is joining forces with victim service programs, criminal justice officials, and concerned citizens throughout Henrico and America to observe National Crime Victims' Rights Week. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors of Henrico County, Virginia, recognizes the week of April 13th through April 19th, 2008, as Henrico County Crime Victims' Rights Week. Be it further proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors reaffirms the county's commitment to respect and enforce victims' rights and address their needs during 2008 Crime Victims' Rights Week and throughout the year. Be it further proclaimed that a suitably prepared copy of this proclamation be presented to representatives of the Henrico County Victim Witness Assistance Program on April 8, 2008. It's signed by David Cackley, our chairman, and attested to by Barry Marks, clerk to the board. Thank you very much for all that you do for, unfortunately, victims of crime.
Thank you, Ms. O'Bannon, chairman, county manager Hayslip. We appreciate you recognizing and supporting the Victim Witness Program and victims of crime, and we accept this proclamation on all their behalf.
Our next proclamation, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, is Library Week, which is also April the 13th through the 19th. We'll ask several individuals to come to the podium. Gail A. Adkins, chairman of the Library Advisory Board, to be joined by Gregory M. Clay, vice chairman, Gloria L. Wilkerson, Brooklyn District Representative, Dr. Harmahindu Singh Sandhu, who is the Fairfield District Representative, Andy Sterling, Tuckahoe District Representative, and Gerald M. McKenna, Director of Libraries. Presentation will be made by Mr. James B. Donati, Verona District Supervisor.
I think we are, as Henrico citizens, we're very fortunate to probably have one of the best library systems anywhere in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And it's due to our good staff and also those people, those citizens that serve on the Library Advisory Board who give up their time to make sure that we have a good quality of life, not only just in the library, but all of the other boards and commissions that our citizens serve on. So I want to thank, and it's an alum of them here, and Gail, you're the chairman, and coming from the extreme reaches of Verona this evening, so we thank you for coming that far to be here. So, Library Week, April the 13th to the 19th, 2008. Whereas public, academic, school, and specialized libraries help transform communities and play a vital role in supporting the quality of life of these communities. And whereas librarians help people of all ages and backgrounds find and interpret the information they need to live, learn, and work in the 21st century. And whereas libraries are a part of the American dream, places for opportunity, education, self-help, and lifelong learning. And whereas libraries bring our citizens a world of knowledge, both in person and online. And whereas libraries are a key player in the national discourse of intellectual freedom, equity of access, and narrowing the digital divide, and whereas libraries, librarians, library workers, and library supporters across the county of Henrico, the Commonwealth of Virginia, and the United States celebrate National Library Week each year. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors of Henrico County, Virginia, hereby recognizes April the 13th through the 19th, 2008, as Library Week and call upon Henrico citizens to participate in its observance. Be it further proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors encourages our citizens to take advantage of the numerous library resources available to them, to thank the library staff workers for making information readily accessible to everyone in person or online, and to join the circle of knowledge at all of our libraries. And it's signed by our chairman, David Cackley, and attested by our clerk, Barry Lawrence. And I want to congratulate you for the great job that you do, and as we celebrate Library Week.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Board of Supervisors, and Mr. Manager, as the new chair of the Library Advisory Board, I thank you for this proclamation. The entire Library Advisory Board is most appreciative of your ongoing commitment to supporting public libraries in Henrico County. National Library Week has been celebrated annually for over four decades to highlight libraries. We encourage all Henrico citizens to take advantage of the services either online or in person at one of our convenient 10 library locations. We also thank you for considering our request several years ago to standardize the library system's operating hours system-wide. Having only two sets of operating hours, one for our four area libraries and one for our five branch libraries, has greatly reduced confusion for our citizens. We are very excited about the opening of our two newest facilities, Tuckahoe and Twin Hickory, that were approved by the voters in the 2000 bond referendum. Finally, we are pleased with the upcoming renovation and addition that will be taking place shortly at the Glenn Allen Library. Thank you again for your continuing support and commitment towards providing excellent public library services to all of our citizens.
Mr. Chairman, our next proclamation is for Public Safety Telecommunicators Week, also April the 13th through the 19th. I will ask Colonel Henry W. Stanley, Chief of Police, to come forward. He will be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Douglas A. Middleton, who is the Deputy Chief of Police, Major James B. Fitzgerald, Support Operations, Captain Carl A. Mueller, who is Commander of Communications, Susan T. Roberts, the Emergency Communications Manager, and Devonna L. Hill, who is Communications Officer of the Year. Presentation will be made by Mr. David A. Cackley, Chairman of the Board of Supervisors.
Thank you all for being here. This is a proclamation for our Public Safety Telecommunicators Week, the week of April 13th through the 19th of 2008. Whereas the communications officers of the Henrico County Division of Police serve the local community by answering telephone calls for fire, police, and emergency medical services, assisting and assuring that the appropriate response is dispatched as efficiently as possible, and whereas communication officers play a vital role in protecting the health and safety of their fellow citizens, and whereas Henrico County citizens depend on the skill, expertise, and commitment of the professionals who provide unselfish service on a daily basis in every stressful situation. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors of Henrico County, Virginia, hereby recognizes the week of April 13th through the 19th, 2008, as Public Safety Telecommunicators week and encourages all citizens to make note of this observance. Be it further proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors salutes San Marco County's telecommunicators officers for their exemplary professionalism, service, and performance, and signed by Chairman Dave Cackley and Clerk Barry Lawrence. So, can't say enough thanks to all of you for the work you do and protecting our citizens. It's a great service, and thanks a lot.
On behalf of the communications section, we do thank you for this proclamation. And especially, Ms. O'Bannon, as you know, those calls for service cannot take place, and we in police and fire cannot do our duties without the call coming through the communications section. So it is very important that those calls are received in the proper manner. And for these ladies and gentlemen that do perform that service for the county, we certainly do appreciate what they do. And thank you all for your continued support.
Our next proclamation, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, is for Child Abuse Prevention Month, which will be April 2008. I'll ask Karen M. Coppola, who's a FAM coordinator for the Greater Richmond SCAN, to come forward. She will be joined by Sean M. Rozier, who is Assistant Director of Social Services, and Gretchen B. Eichard, who is the Child Protective Services Supervisor. The presentation will be made by our chairman, Mr. David A. Cackley.
All right, here we have a proclamation for Child Abuse Prevention Month, the month of April 2008. And whereas 6,487 children in the Commonwealth of Virginia were victims of abuse and neglect in fiscal year 2007, as documented by the Virginia Department of Social Services, and whereas 209 of these young victims were residents of Henrico County, and whereas child abuse and neglect is a serious community problem requiring comprehensive community solutions, and whereas effective child abuse prevention programs rely on partnerships among social service and law enforcement agencies, schools, religious and civic organizations, medical facilities, and businesses, and whereas many dedicated individuals throughout Henrico County work daily to break the cycle of child abuse and neglect, and to find families, and to find families the assistance they need, and whereas all citizens should become more aware of how their community is adversely affected by child abuse and neglect, and whereas raising children in a safe and nurturing homes strengthens the community, and whereas parents have the most critical influence on their child's development and need support and education from their community to help celebrate the joys and negotiate the challenges of parenting. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors of Henrico County, Virginia, hereby recognizes April 2008 as Child Abuse Prevention Month and calls upon Henrico citizens to participate in appropriate programs and activities to help protect children in the many local communities from child abuse and neglect, and signed by Chairman Dave Cackley and Clerk Barry Lawrence. So, again, thank you for all that you do.
Thank you. And on behalf of Greater Richmond SCAN, Stop Child Abuse Now, we'd like to thank you for making this proclamation and gratefully accept it, and also appreciate your ongoing support in our mission to keep the children in our community safe. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Manager, I would also like to say thank you on behalf of the many dedicated staff at Henrico DSS, the Social Services Department, who work to prevent and respond to child abuse and neglect in this community. I also would like to take the opportunity to thank our community partners for their efforts, which are being recognized tonight as well. It truly does take a community effort to respond to this serious nationwide problem, and their efforts are key in our endeavors to work towards seeing children raised in safe and nurturing homes. Situations we face as we work with victims of child abuse and neglect are often complex and upsetting to many individuals, to all who are involved. And knowing that our county leaders support us in this undertaking serves as an encouragement to us and to our partners. So thank you again for your support.
Chairman, the last proclamation for consideration this evening is Keep in Record Beautiful Month, which would be April 2008. Several individuals are here with us this evening. Ms. Lynn Yurchek, who is chairman of the Keep in Record Beautiful Committee. She will be joined by Virginia M. Martin, Brooklyn District Representative, Marion J. Martin, Fairfield District Representative, Linda B. Turner, the Verona District Representative, Cindy Funk, Verona District Representative, Brian Montgomery, Fairfield District Representative, also Mr. Arthur D. Petrini, Director of Public Utilities, and Megan Brown, our Executive Coordinator for Keeping Rico Beautiful. I will ask Mr. Richard W. Glover, Brooklyn District Supervisor, to make the presentation.
The manager said that this was the last proclamation for the evening. While it's not the most important, certainly, it's the most beautiful. Couldn't help that. This is a Keeping Record Beautiful Month, April 2008, and we have a lot of fantastic volunteers that put in a lot of time that does an outstanding job. And whereas littering is unlawful, unsightly, and hazardous to health, and whereas the Keeping Record Beautiful Program and Keeping Record Beautiful Committee of appointed volunteers were established in 1980 to develop and lead educational litter prevention activities and encourage participation of all Henrico County residents in litter prevention and recycling. And whereas for the past 28 years, members of the Keep Henrico Beautiful Committee have dedicated their time, talent, and energy to the successful direction of anti-litter educational programs. And whereas the Keeping Rico Beautiful Committee disseminates educational materials and sponsors programs, special events, and workshops to foster public awareness of the environment, and whereas several thousand Henrico County residents now participate in litter prevention and recycling projects, including the Because We Care volunteer litter pickup program, through their community associations, churches, scout troops, school clubs, civic groups, and businesses, and whereas the Keeping Rico Beautiful program has received local, state, and national awards of excellence, which have enhanced the reputation of the County of Henrico, and whereas the Keeping Rico Beautiful program has maintained a strong relationship with Henrico County Public Schools by providing classroom presentations and lesson plans on litter prevention and recycling that correlate with the Virginia Standards of Learning, and whereas this year the Keeping Rico Beautiful created over 700 environmentally themed bulletin board kits, which were distributed to every kindergarten, first grade, and second grade public school classroom in the county. Now therefore be it proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors of Henrico County, Virginia, hereby recognizes April 2008 as Keeping Rico Beautiful Month, and urges all residents of the county to show their environmental stewardship by not littering and recycling materials. Be it further proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors encourages Henrico citizens to celebrate our clean county by joining the efforts to keep Henrico beautiful. This is signed by David A. Cackley, Chairman, and attested by Barry R. Lawrence, Clerk to the Board of Supervisors. And Lynn, this is quite a proclamation. You all deserve it, and even more. Thank you very much.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Glover, members of the board, Mr. County Manager. As member, I'm a chairman of the Keep Henrico Beautiful Committee this year. I've been on the committee for 10 years. I gladly accept this proclamation, and I thank you very much for it, and I also thank you for your continued support. Good evening.
Thank you. All right, that moves us all into our public hearing with rezoning cases, Mr. Manager.
It does, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. The first item for your consideration is a request for deferral. I will bring you to item 99-08, which is C-63C-07 in the Verona District. This is JSN Development. It is a request to conditionally rezone from A1 Agriculture District to B2C Business District Conditional, approximately 3.8 acres, located at the southeast intersection of Strath Road and New Market Road, which is Route 5. Planning Commission voted to recommend the Board of Supervisors grant this request. A request is being made to defer this item until May 13th.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Is there anybody in the audience here who objects to the deferral of this case this evening?
Okay, seeing none, Mr. Chairman, I move that we defer this case at the applicant's request.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Donati,
second
by Ms. O'Bannon, to defer this case until May 13th. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no, then that case will be deferred. Okay.
No other items for deferral consideration this evening, Mr. Chairman. We move to the top of your public hearing agenda. I will call two cases together. You will, of course, vote on them separately. First two items is 97-08, being C-4C-08 in the Three Chob District. This is RER, New Boston, West Broad Street. It is a request to conditionally rezone from O3 Office District, O3C Office District Conditional, and B3C Business District Conditional, all to B3C Business District Conditional, approximately 6.4 acres, located in the Westmark Office Park at the southwest intersection of West Broad Street and Interstate 64. Planning Commission voted to recommend the Board of Supervisors grant this request. There is a companion case, 98-08, being P-2-08. This is RER, New Boston, West Broad Street. It is a request for a provisional use permit under Chapter 24 of the County Code to permit a building height of up to 150 feet at the same location. The Planning Commission voted to also recommend the Board of Supervisors grant this request. While we can discuss both of them, they will have to be voted upon individually. Mr. Emerson.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. C4COA requests to rezone a portion of the Westmark Office Park, located on West Broad Street and adjacent to I-64, to B3C, to allow construction of a hotel. Previously, a portion of the site was rezoned to B3C via C73C05 to allow two restaurants. This proposal would expand the B3C district, relocate two proposed restaurants, and develop a 200-room hotel. A companion provisional use permit request, P-2-08, requests allowance to build the hotel to 250 feet in height. P-208 will be presented in conjunction with this case. You have just received a revised proffer statement dated April 4th with a new proffer number 9, which commits to no more than two freestanding restaurant sites. The land use plan recommends office for the subject site. As reflected on the conceptual plan, a hotel and one restaurant will be located on the parcel's far northwest corner adjacent to the I-64 interchange. The second restaurant will be placed near the entrance to West Broad Street. The applicant has submitted proffers which would retain all applicable proffers accepted with C73C05 for the B3C district. Major aspects of the proffers address the following topics. Use is limited to office buildings, banks, hotels, and two freestanding restaurants without drive-through windows. The primary exterior materials of the hotel or office building would consist of stone, precast tile, finished masonry materials, or glass. Extending the 35-foot-wide landscape buffer from 227 linear feet to 445 linear feet along West Broad Street and enhancing the plantings within this buffer as part of a landscape plan to be submitted during plan of development review. And constructing any hotel walls adjacent to I-64 with a minimum 54 sound transmission coefficient rating. With P208, the applicant requests to extend the maximum permitted height of the proposed hotel to 150 feet. In the B3 district, county code allows hotels up to 45 feet in height as a principal use, or up to 200 feet in height with the approval of a provisional use permit. 10 conditions have been proposed by staff, including conditions to address fire department concerns, parking requirements, and architectural elevations. Westmark is an important office property where primarily office use is encouraged. However, this proposal constitutes a reasonable expansion of existing commercial zoning on the site. The proposed uses would support the office park concept, and the location would be appropriate for the increased building height. For these reasons, staff supports both the rezoning request and the provisional use permit request, subject to the recommended conditions contained in the report. The Planning Commission, at their March 13th meeting, recommended approval of both C4-C08 and P-208 with the conditions 1 through 10 as recommended by staff. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them.
Okay. We've reviewed this this case pretty thoroughly in the last few days. The previous zoning on this case in 2005, I guess it was, allowed some of this development. But are all these properties new to this case, or some of them pertain to previous case? Or
They are, for the most part, carryovers, Mr. Cackley. The primary change is the allowance for the hotel, which was not allowed previously. The original case also limited the pad sites,
right.
And of course the amendment you received tonight includes that amendment.
Right.
So they're essentially consistent with the original proffer, save the hotel use, and
right.
Of course the provisional use for the additional height.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I know the Planning Commission is comfortable and staff is comfortable with these modified properties.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I have no more questions. Anybody, any board members have any additional questions? This is a public hearing. Is anybody in the audience have any opposition or questions or concerns? Very good. All right, then a motion then to adopt the revised proffers and to follow the recommendation of the Planning Commission and grant the zoning would be in order.
Right, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move case 97-08. C4-C08, follow the recommendation of the Planning Commission and grant the request with amended proffers.
Right.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Donati. Moved by Mr. Donati, motion by Mr. Donati, and second by Ms. O'Bannon to approve the case with the revised proffers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. And that case is approved. And now, is there any more comments on the use permit? Any questions? Anybody in the audience have any questions, concerns about the provisional use permit? That's good.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we follow a recommendation of the Planning Commission and grant the request for the use permit.
Second.
All right. Move by Mr. Denai, second by Ms. O'Bannon that this use permit be approved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is also approved. Did the applicant want to have anything you want to say? Huh? Okay. Well, thank you.
Next item, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, 99-08 has been previously deferred. We move to 100-08, being C-3C-08 in the Three Child District. This is Georgie Giorvi and Alexander Alexandrov. It is a request to rezone from R3, one family residence district, to O2C, office district conditional. Approximately 8/10 of an acre, located on the northwest line of North Parham Road and approximately 126 feet west of its intersection with Skipwith. The Planning Commission voted to recommend the Board of Supervisors grant this request. Ms. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Manager, members of the board. The applicant wishes to rezone two abutting properties to permit the conversion of single-family structures into office uses. Together, as said, the properties comprise of approximately 0.79 acres and located on the northwest line of North Parham Road. The properties are surrounded by office uses, with the exception of a single family used to the northeast. And currently, the property, as you can see, has the two structures, and there's two existing driveway that serves each structure. The applicant has proffered a conceptual plan that would remove the westernmost driveway and consolidate the lots and convert to office building with the shared entrance in the middle and parking in the rear. Other major aspects of the proffers include the following. The uses, banks and daycares would not be permitted on the site. And if the structures were to be raised, any future buildings would be constructed with compatible buildings similar to what's there today. That would include materials of brick, stone, wood, stucco, and aggregated, exposed aggregate. Any signs would be monumental style, detached sign, not exceeding 6 feet in height. And supplemental landscaping would also be provided along North Parham Road, including four trees and foundation plantings along the existing structures. The 2010 land use plan recommends office for the subject site and the surrounding area. This request would be consistent with this recommendation, and it would be a logical expansion of the office uses in the area. Therefore, staff does support this request, and the Planning Commission recommend approval at their March 13, 2008 meeting. This concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Is this site plan proper, or is it conceptual, or is it both, or what?
Yes, sir. The conceptual plan shown is proffered.
It's proffered. Okay.
Yes, sir.
So that will be a concrete driveway and all that. And,
yes, sir.
And you also mentioned the the landscape plan. Is that what's contained in the proffer there?
It is contained in the proffer language. Is not particularly shown on the conceptual plan. And basically, it commits to adding just four trees along the frontage or as he fits so it doesn't obstruct view, in addition to foundation planting, which is lacking at the existing structures now.
That doesn't need further description, just foundation planting. So that's okay. Okay. Was there something that about these two lots that would be combined after the zoning, or how does that work?
Yes, sir. They have basically they would vacate the line in between the properties and consolidate them in one, and
okay.
That allow them to operate as one and use the shared entrance into it.
Okay. Any other board members have any questions? Okay. Good case. Anybody in the audience have any questions, any concerns, or objection to the proposed zoning? Okay.
Seeing that, Mr. Chairman, I move we follow recommendation of the Planning Commission and grant the request.
Second. Okay.
Moved by Mr. Donati and seconded by Ms. O'Bannon that this case be approved following the recommendations of the Planning Commission. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. That case is approved. Thank you.
Next case, Mr. Chairman, the members of the board, 101-08, being P-5-08 in the Verona District. This is Selco Partnership. It is a request for a provisional use permit under Chapter 24 of the County Code in order to construct a 150-foot high monopole telecommunications tower and related equipment located at the southeast intersection of East 9 Mile Road, Hanover Road, Lumber Drive, and the Norfolk Southern Corporation Railroad right-of-way. The Planning Commission voted to recommend the Board of Supervisors grant this request. Ms. Moore?
Thank you. As stated, Verizon Wireless is requesting to construct a 150-foot high telecommunication-style communication tower on the property surrounded by Norfolk Southern Railroad, Interstate 64, and East 9 Mile Road. The site is currently zoned M1 light industrial, and towers exceeding 100 feet in this district require the approval of a provisional use permit. The 2010 land use plan recommends light industrial. The closest residential development is approximately 400 feet away, and all the developments are either separated from a railroad track or Interstate 64. Other nearby and surrounding uses include M1 light industrial and commercial B3 uses. Therefore, also the all code setbacks requirements for the tower would be met. The 150-foot monopole tower would support the co-location of three sectors with 12 antenna array, so it would allow for three potential users. This request is consistent with the land use plan and the goals, objectives of the policies of the county's wireless technology communication element of the plan, and that the site is industrial in character. It's isolated from residential uses and does provide for co-location opportunities. Therefore, staff is supportive of this request with the recommended conditions submitted in the staff report. The Planning Commission recommend approval of this request at their March 13, 2008 meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Moore. Any board members have any questions?
Chairman, see if anyone's in opposition or has any comments on this.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Is there anybody in the audience tonight who is opposed to this provision or this permit or has any questions or comments? Yes, sir. Are you opposed? Just a question? Well, you want to come up here and then you can identify yourself for us?
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Tony Mahajic. I own the property cross street from where they're going to build that tower up there. Mm-hmm. And the real intersection up there over there for the lot, the one we have it there, there is the bushes is so high, if you want to just come from Nine Mile or coming from Hanover Road, through the bushes, you can see the other car that's the one is coming from there. So on my behalf and my neighbor, we request from whoever coming to build anything over there just to clear the lot and to do the landscape for the area up there. That's all.
You request that the lot be cleared?
To clear the lot. And keep the landscaping, cut the grass, and keep the lot clean.
Okay. That's a request. Have you posed that to the applicant before?
No, not sure.
No. Okay. You don't oppose.
No, it's just like I recommend that.
Okay. Okay, we'll see if we can get the applicant to address that request.
All right, thank you.
Anybody else tonight who has any problems or concerns or questions? Is the applicant?
Yeah, applicant for you.
Yeah.
Chairman, members of the board, my name is Jen Rosen. I'm with Hersher Fleischer. I'm here tonight on behalf of Verizon Wireless. I bring with me some members of Verizon Wireless, Mr. Merle Dager, Mr. Sean Bam, and they can also answer your questions. In response to the constituent, Verizon Wireless will keep clear its lease area, which is an 80 by 100 lease area, and the access to the site. It's only less than a third of an acre of the parcel that they will be utilizing. They don't have any authority with the rest of the parcel.
Okay. So, but you'll have that area fenced in anyway, won't you?
Correct. There will be a 6-foot-high fence area around the 80 by 60 compound.
Right.
Absolutely.
Then the landowner would be responsible for the rest of the lot.
Yeah, correct. I mean, we're only coming with a request for, I think it's 0.28 acre of the 1.346 parcel. But our fence will encompass the 80 by 60 compound.
Okay. So you have to clear that lot anyway.
Correct.
And there will be a fence and then natural.
Correct.
All right, sir, do you understand? Does that satisfy you? Good. Very good.
Who is the owner of the property?
It is a corporation, the name of which is escaping me at the moment. Mountaineer Properties, Inc.
Beg your pardon?
It's Mountaineer Properties, Inc.
Yeah, it's right here.
All right. Any more questions for the applicant?
All right, seeing none, Mr. Chairman, I move we file a recommendation of the Planning Commission and grant the request.
Second.
All right. Moved by Mr. Donati and second by Ms. O'Bannon that we grant this provisional use permit as recommended by the Planning Commission. All in favor, say aye.
And you want to include
aye.
Conditions?
Aye. Opposed, no? All right. Motion carries.
Next item, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, 102-08, being C-7C-08 in the Fairfield District. This is Partners Financial Federal Credit Union. It's a request to conditionally rezone from R4, One Family Residence District, and O2C, Office District Conditional, all to O2C, Office District Conditional. A approximately 1.2 acres located at the northwest intersection of Brook Road and New York Avenue. Planning Commission voted to recommend the Board of Supervisors grant this request. Ms. Moore?
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. This request would rezone two properties which would function as one entity. The western portion is zoned R4 and contains a single-family dwelling. The eastern portion, adjacent to Brook Road, was rezoned to O2C by KC23C02 and allowed the existing credit union use. The applicant proposes to convert the existing dwelling to administrative offices as part of the credit union. In addition, the applicant essentially wishes to update the properties accepted with C23C02 to allow the installation of a drive-through ATM. The 2010 land use plan does recommend office for the properties. The site is also located in a residential transition area. The applicant has proffered a conceptual plan depicting the area of the ATM and the drive aisles, with access still be provided on New York Avenue. With the exception of the canopy, the structures would not be enlarged or altered. Other proffers would regulate the hours of operation, signage, and uses. Therefore, child care facilities and medical offices would not be permitted on the property, and would also provide and continue a 15-foot wide buffer along the northern property line. All the proffers accepted with C23-CO2 would be carried forward, except for the filing exceptions. Due to the location of the existing structure to be converted, a 5 to 10-foot wide landscape buffer with a 6-foot high opaque privacy fence would be installed along the western property line to the rear of the existing structure, and then continuing on to New York Avenue with a 4-foot high non-privacy fence. In addition, a 6-foot high fence would be included in within the 15-foot wide buffer along the north. The limitation of 6 employees for the credit union use has been removed, and the hours of operation from Monday through Friday would be extended 1/2 hour to 6 p.m. Staff does note that the hours of operation for the ATM would not be limited by the submitted proffers. However, the proposed location adjacent to Brook Road, as shown on the conceptual plan, should minimize any impacts on the residents of New York Avenue. Overall, the requested zoning is consistent with the office recommendation of the land use plan. Use would take place within an existing structure and would not be enlarged and would retain its residential appearance. And the proffers would provide for quality development in keeping with the existing credit union. Staff supports this request, and the Planning Commission recommended approval of this request at their March 13, 2008 meeting.
All right. You might note that this is in a Fairfield district, and Mr. Thornton is absent because of some surgery today, and he's asked Mr. Glover to hear this case on his behalf.
You want to see if there's any opposition, Mr.?
Okay. First of all, any questions, board members, from Ms. Moore? Okay. Is anybody here in the audience tonight is in opposition and would like to hear the case? And you are in opposition, right? Okay. Are you comfortable with that, Mr. Glover?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can hear the case.
Okay. Who's going to present the case, Mr. Theobald?
Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jim Theobald, and I'm here this evening on behalf of Partners Financial Federal Credit Union. This request is to amend proffers on an existing parcel, which has been zoned for office uses originally in 1984, and to also rezone adjacent parcel for use as the credit union's accounting department, which has but 3 employees and a conference room. This request is consistent with the county's land use plan and has broad support. Partners is a nonprofit organization and exists for the sole benefit of its members. Their business is generally for checking accounts, savings accounts, Christmas clubs, home, and car loans. Members work and live in Henrico County and the Fairfield District, and they work for such organizations as CSX, Henrico Doctors Hospital, the federal government, Virginia National Guard and Southern States, as well as Time Life, among others. the vast majority do online banking rather than go to a branch bank. This shows you the location of the site. There is this home that we're adding to the existing credit union. It is also in the land use plan for office use. You'll note the entire frontage of Brook Road being in the plan for office use. This is Brook Road going north. This is the State Police Headquarters. This is New York Avenue here. This is the current location of the credit union with the additional home next door that we propose adding to the use. And note this area in here is a cemetery, and so will not be altered at all. In fact, will be buffered. You have a switching station on the other side of Route 1. You have a home directly across from the Federal Union that long ago was also zoned for office use and has a company in it that does marketing promotional materials. This is the site plan, which has in fact been proffered, the existing home. This is the current one that's under request. We would have to add a few additional spaces, mostly on the existing site. You can see the devising line in this area. And the ATM and drive-through teller is not attached to this facility. In fact, it is down the hill, close to Route 1, and would be basically the drive-in teller would be serviced by a vacuum-type system and also an ATM machine here with a kiosk that has no additional signage on it, by the way. So it would be the existing entrance drive off of New York Avenue that would facilitate these new additions. This is the home that houses the current credit union. You're looking basically north here towards the intersection with 295. This is down the hill, standing close to Brook Road. This is in the general area where the ATM and the drive-through teller facility would be. Note the relationship in terms of the existing neighborhood with Route 1. This is looking back towards Brook Road. Obviously, here is our monument-style sign, and this is the general area where that ATM machine would be up against Brook Road. We do not have direct access to Route 1. It's too close to the two intersections. This is standing on our site looking at the entrance ramps to 295. Route 1 has some 25,000 cars a day going by this location on Route 1. This is the additional home that we're seeking rezoning on. It was we had a right of first refusal on it. The house came up for sale. We exercised our right of first refusal on the house and have owned it for about a year. This is in between the new home and the existing home. We do have a letter of support from this property owner. It's in your file, and it is along this line that we propose a 6-foot board-on-board fence from the rear corner of the house back to the property line. 4-foot height in this area to be a little more residential in scale with shrubbery continuing on up the property line. This is standing behind the home. You note that the home is in some disrepair, which would all be upgraded, of course, and this would be the location of the 6-foot tall board-on-board fence. Just another view looking back to the north down that same property line. Number of proffered conditions, landscape buffer and fence on that westernmost property line next to the single-family home to hide activity in the back, including the parking. Landscape buffer and fence on the northern property line up against the cemetery. That's a 15-foot buffer with a 6-foot-high board-on-board fence. We have limited hours of operation except for the ATM. They're open from 8:30 in the morning until 6 at night, Monday through Friday, and 9 to 12:30 on Saturdays. The site plan has been proffered. No buildings can be enlarged. No child care, funeral homes, or medical offices. We have restricted our signage. No public address systems can be maybe heard off premises. In fact, it's up against Brook Road. Height of parking lot lighting limited to 15 feet in height from a concealed source. All HVAC equipment to be screened. Trash receptacles to be screened as well. This is a community-based credit union. It serves over 900 Fairfield District members alone. This is an opportunity to maintain the residential character while upgrading these structures. We are adjacent to or across from office use, the switching station, the cemetery, and state police headquarters. This area is slated for revitalization along the Route 1 corridor. Importantly, we've been a good neighbor, believe we have significant support, and we are in compliance with the county's land use plan recommendation. There are about half a dozen letters of support in the file that include the owner of the home that's used as an office across New York Avenue, the home behind it, occupied by a resident, the house beside the house we're rezoning, who would be potentially most impacted, the church just down the street, and Mr. Vidler with the Brook Road Business Association has also indicated his support. We have a number of people here in the audience tonight who have also come to support this request, some of whom may speak, not sure. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Theobald. Any board members?
Yeah, take me back to the slide that shows the additional parking and where it'll be and how it would be impacted.
This plan, sir?
Yeah.
This is the existing location for the credit union. This is the new house that's being acquired and would house the three employees for the accounting department and the conference room. This is the existing parking that is sketched in, and we would be adding about six spaces here, most of which, all but maybe a half a space on each side, is on the existing property.
Okay. Now, the cemetery behind it.
Yes, sir.
I think that's an old cemetery that's not in use as far as there's no one now. In other words, it's not in use. People aren't being interred there.
My understanding is possibly within the last 10 years there might have been a burial over there. It is not particularly well maintained.
I remember walking through it with some of the neighbors there when this area was in Brooklyn District.
Yes, sir.
In the original zoning case of 1984.
Yes, sir, for the front for office. This has been used, was part of the church. This has been used for a daycare facility, a parsonage.
It was the Dover Association originally.
Yes, sir.
Okay, any other?
I have a question. This may actually go to staff. I know this is an office zoning, but are there any limitations that they're offering, or have you proffered any for I'll say like adult bookstore uses or that kind of thing, or are these the type of,
It's office zoning.
There aren't any of those.
Proffered out any use other than the credit union.
Yeah, I know, but you've
can't
proffered out some that it can't be used as.
No, ma'am.
They don't need to be.
Oh, well, there's not an additional.
I guess that's really a staff question.
Okay.
That was a note that I had that I forgot to ask. I don't know what Mr. Thornton has chosen to do with this, but I just want to make sure that...
Yes, ma'am. The requested rezoning to O2C has very limited uses within that district.
Okay.
So all these other objectional type uses, such adult uses, would not even be permitted in an office district.
That's the answer to my question. Thank you.
Okay. Any other board member questions? If not, we can hear from the opposition and then... try to answer any other questions you may have. Well, we'll take a look at it. Right.
Good evening. My name is Regina McHugh. I live on New York Avenue. I've lived there for 10 years. I'm a homeowner.
Can we see your home here?
I'm sorry?
Can we see your home on this site?
It's very small.
Well...
It's at 1317 New York Avenue, actually.
Oh, down the road a little bit.
Yes, sir. That street is three blocks long. We have recently been approved by the county to have two speed bumps put on that street because people have been clocked going 70 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. There are currently signs restricting trucks, the weight of trucks. Also, there are additional fines for speeding. Our concerns are pretty obvious, I think. We're concerned about the increase in traffic. All of the entrance and exits for this facility is on New York Avenue. You know, people raise their families. There's a Longdale Elementary School. A number of the children that live in that neighborhood walk to that school. Their parents walk them there as well. They ride their bikes. We have a number of people who walk to the church, Biltmore Baptist Church, which is a half a block away, perhaps, from the facility. The sidewalks on that street are not complete. They're very sketchy. There's some that are completed and some that aren't. So there's really no sensible way or good way or safe way for somebody to walk. And with increased traffic, that's just going to be a bigger concern for us. We're also concerned about our property values. Where exactly does the commercial end and the residential start? I mean, where do you say enough is enough? I've also brought pictures from at the opposite end of the street, closer to Mountain Road. There is a small strip mall. There is Class A maintenance landscaping. There is another offices. There's some industrial or light industrial. I've brought some pictures to show. Brook Road is six lanes. That's something else that we have to contend with. People use our street, New York Avenue, as a cut-through to go from Mountain Road to Brook Road. But I wanted to show you these pictures. Again, just, you know, a number of concerns, again, are the increased traffic, the increased speed, the decrease in our property values. We're having to contend now with commercial both ends of our street, and again, it's only three blocks long. It's an older neighborhood. It's a blue-collar neighborhood. A number of county workers work there and live there. And I would ask that the properties that are next door, they're all residential. It's a neighborhood. It's a community where people live. I don't think that this is a sensible use to turn a residential into an office space, especially if it's only going to house three employees in a conference room. It just doesn't make sense, and I would ask that you all reconsider this. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's see if we'll let you all speak, and then we'll see if there are questions. Okay.
Members of the board, my name is David Harris. I just wanted to say that I am a resident on New York Avenue, and I concur with what Regina Hughes said a minute ago. Thank you.
Okay. You both have the same concerns about traffic. Yeah. Sir, you want to speak?
My name's George Meadowcroft, and my biggest concern is traffic, but another concern is you're just selling a neighborhood and making office space and building, and eventually you're going to push us out.
Okay.
All right, thank you, sir.
Okay, any board member questions from the opposition here? You feel that some of the traffic is going to exit down New York Avenue coming out of? Is that a cut through to somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
It is, okay. Yeah. All right.
I would be curious also how much traffic that credit union or that drive through. How many members?
Can you speak in the microphone? Cause
excuse me.
If you would, thank you.
Just sitting there, I was curious with that drive through on the credit union, how many members there are and how much through traffic would be there.
I think traffic can address the number of trips per day that are generated there. Okay.
Could you answer that question? Does traffic, did we do a traffic, do you know what it is?
Yes, sir. The additional ATM lanes are expected to generate about 132 trips per day. Additional for this development.
And 132 trips a day means 66 in and 66 out, is that right?
Correct, for the average for the day. Looking at AM peak, adding 8 vehicles entering and 8 vehicles exiting, the PM peak, 10 entering and 10 exiting.
And peak meaning what time?
8 to 7 to 9 in the morning, and in the afternoon it'd be 4 to 6 p.m. And to follow up on some of the citizens' concerns about New York Avenue, New York Avenue is in our traffic calming program.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, there are the signs that say additional $200 for speeding. Those were installed in March of 2006.
Since then, the citizens requested follow-up studies, and we did find that there's still a speeding problem on that street. And back in September of last year, I sent out a packet to the resident that requested the program for the signatures to have phase two, the speed humps installed on the street. At this time, I have not got the signature packet back. So phase two is warranted, but at this time, I have not got the signatures back needed, as you know, for phase two of the program.
How long has it been out?
September of 07 is when September of last year is when I sent that packet out. So it's, 6 months or 7 months?
And it hasn't come back yet?
No, sir.
The likelihood of it coming back now?
It may not, and what I may need to do is work with these residents and see if they can get the appropriate signatures.
What's the traffic count on New York Avenue, do you know?
The traffic count when we did the last study was right at 1,000 vehicles per day.
Okay.
I have another question.
Very good.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Okay. Does anybody need to add anything more? Let's see if all of you need to say anything else.
Well, if we could put it like that.
Something constructive.
I would just echo what Mr. Jennings had to say. I think the traffic generated by this request is negligible, particularly based on the peak hour traffic. And I would suggest to you that we have enhanced this area with our renovation of both the existing credit union facility and what we would do with this home rather than detract from the area. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Did anyone else want to speak to it? You had mentioned it.
You have support.
I have silent support.
You got support. All right. Does anybody else have any other comments they'd like to make? If not, Ms. Glover, or you?
Yeah, you know, I had talked with Mr. Thornton concerning this case. I'm very familiar with the case because it goes back to 1984 when I was sitting on the planning commission at that time when we rezoned it to the Dover Association. The neighborhood, they really felt like it was a good use for that particular piece of property because it was down on a major artery that transported 25,000 trips a day. And living right there on that corner wasn't really that desirable for the people. I walked the cemetery in the back with one of the neighbors over on Connecticut Avenue. I've been all through that neighborhood a number of times. I also talked to the planning commissioner, Chris, and he was very much in favor of this. I'm a little bit surprised that we haven't had, and I've sat on the planning commission, so I heard this case. It was heard by the planning commission a month ago, and no one was in opposition to the case at that time. As a matter of fact, the people were in favor of the case because of the neighbor that's there now. So based on that and Mr. Thornton briefing me on the case, having been a part of the Planning Commission at the time it was recommended for approval, hearing those opposition until tonight, I feel like Mr. Thornton had given it a conscientious thoughts, and so with him telling me that he would recommend it, I'm going to follow the recommendation of the Planning Commission and grant the case.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Glover to approve the case. Following.
Second.
And a second by Ms. O'Bannon. All in favor then say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no, then the case is granted.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, still under your public hearing agenda, 103-08. This is a resolution for appeal designated as TC-227. This is an alternative fence height for the Rainier residence on Fond du Lac Road. Mr. O'Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. As mentioned, this is an appeal of a decision of the Planning Commission denying the approval of a landscape and alternative fence height plan for the Rainier residence. The property is located at 2008 Fond du Lac Road, approximately 400 feet south of Anoka Road in the three-trap magisterial district. The landscape plan and alternative fence height was requested by the owner, Dr. Norman Rainier, to include a fence height of 58 inches and to be located along the south property line of the lot adjacent to the neighboring residential property. The proposed fence is proposed to be a white vinyl outer bank style fencing, 36 inches in height, added to the top of an existing brick knee wall that is approximately 22 inches high, making the total height request at 58 inches. The slide before you shows a basic representation of how the fence would appear as proposed by the applicant. This is a photo showing the wall in the front yard of the Rainier property. This is another photograph taken at the end of the wall showing the location on the property line. This is a view from the second story, again showing some of the surrounding lots and the landscaping which has been installed adjacent to the knee wall. Another photograph of the taken from the front yard of the Rainier's property. This is a photograph showing the condition of the adjacent property. The purpose of the applicant's request, of course, was to provide privacy and separation from the adjacent neighbor and an unsightly yard, which does not have any ground cover, or I think there have been quite a few trees that have been removed recently. The county code limits the maximum fence height in a residentially zoned front yard to 3 feet 6 inches unless an alternative fence height along with the landscaping plan is approved by the Planning Commission. This request constituted a 16-inch height deviation in excess of what's otherwise permitted by the code for a portion of the fence which lies within the front yard setback. The Department of Public Works had no comments on the proposed plan, and the county traffic engineer just yesterday again stated the wall and proposed fence did not cause any problems with respect to sight distance and does not adversely affect the safety of the road. The Department of Public Utilities has indicated there are no conflicts with the proposed fence or landscaping within existing easements. Prior to the January Planning Commission hearing, staff received calls from adjacent neighbors who were very much in support of this request. At the February hearing, staff received one call in opposition to the request from the neighbor immediately adjacent to the fence. This neighbor was present at the February 27th hearing, voiced opposition based on concerns about maintenance, drainage, and visibility. The request for an alternative fence site approval was originally deferred by the Planning Commission from their January meeting to the February 27, 2008 meeting, where it was denied unanimously. The applicant has appealed the denial of this request that was filed on March 12, 2008. It was filed on the basis of mistake of fact and application of erroneous principles of law. Those were the two reasons that the applicant stated for their appeal. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Manager, Mr. Chairman. You did have a work session on this matter this afternoon. Staff introduced the appeal to you. At that time, it was mentioned there is a substitute paper that if you would like to consider that. Dr. Rainier is here to present his application. and there may be, again, opposition to this request.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kelly. The board did have the benefit of reviewing this in a work session, and so we've gone over a bunch of the details, so I don't know if any board members still have a question.
I have a question. Without this variance, what type of fence could be put there? They already have a nice brick knee wall and columns. What could they add to it right now if they didn't get the variance?
It would be the existing knee wall is approximately 22 inches, so something in the neighborhood of 20 inches.
In the back, couldn't they make it taller?
Well, in a moment, sir.
Well, I mean, what is the height restriction at the rear of the property?
At the rear of the property?
No, well, see, this is the side, up to the front of the house.
7 feet.
So they could do it up to 7 feet to the edge of the front of the house.
They could go 7 feet to the front of the garage.
Mm-hmm. Front of the garage.
Right.
And then the 22 inch plus 12 20. Inches or something like that. Mm-hmm.
22 plus 20.
20. In the front, you could add another 20. You could do it to 7 feet in the back, but it still has to be 3.5 feet in front.
That's correct.
That's the whole point. It's sort of the front half of the fence. Okay, just wanted to make that clear. It could be tall in the back, though. Okay.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Kelly?
Okay.
Okay, we will hear from the applicant or from the appealer here, and then if there's opposition, we'll hear from both of you, and then if there are any questions, we'll go from there, okay?
Mr. Chairman, will you see if there's any opposition to this case?
There is. There's
okay, it is. Okay.
You want to identify yourself, sir?
Mr. Chairman, the members of the board, thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. My name is Norman Rayner. I'm a resident of Henrico County. My wife and I have lived in our present home in Henrico County for 42 years. I appear before you this evening to seek a reversal of the Planning Commission's denial of my request for a fence height variance. Specifically, I seek permission for a fence which would be 16 inches higher than the code height of 42 inches for the front portion of a fence between my property and the adjacent property. There are two reasons for the requested fence height. The first reason is to obscure the view of the adjacent property, as we see in this first slide. And this is what it looks like on a good day. This view, just 8 feet from my back door, is what I have to look at every time I walk to my car or mailbox. It is also preferable that people driving through the neighborhood be spared the sight of this mess. The proposed fence, which has previously been shown, and I don't know if I can, Mr. Kelly, can you show this? Yes, thank you. The proposed fence, shown here as an artist's rendition, would achieve the sort obscurement function and would also resolve the second reason for the fence, namely to enable my wife and I to live in peaceful coexistence with the adjacent neighbor. This is consistent with the old adage that fences make good neighbors. My request for the variance was heard by the Planning Commission initially in January of this year. Mrs. Bonnie Lee Jones presided at the hearing as vice chairperson. She denied my request on the basis that the fence would present a, quote, stockade appearance, and therefore is aesthetically unacceptable. Chapter 24, Section 95, L7B of the Henrico County Code delineates five grounds for denial of a request for an increased fence height. There is no mention of aesthetics or stockade effect. A copy of this code section was presented as Exhibit B in the written brief I submitted for this appeal. So, Mrs. Jones was factually incorrect. She also exercised bad judgment. There's probably not one person in 100 that would characterize the fence as a stockade effect for the following reasons. The fence would be only 33 inches high. It would be mounted upon a low brick wall. It would be a high-quality white vinyl picket fence with see-through spaces between the pickets, as we see in this artist's rendition. Also, the white coloration of the fence matches the white trim on the house, so it blends very nicely. The appearance would be softened by decorative shrubs spaced along the existing brick wall, and the wall and fence combination would be located at the lower end of the hill. The rejection by Mrs. Jones produced a tie vote by the panel. Because of this, the issue was deferred for rehearing in February of this year. At the February meeting, Mr. Tommy Brennan was the first on the panel to express an opinion, and it was a rejection. Although not clearly expressed, Mr. Brennan said the issue was, quote, safety of the road and so forth, end quote. That was his reason for the rejection. Now, I'm going to read that again. He said, and I quote, from the minutes of that meeting, safety of the road and so forth. The implication being that the fence would cause a sight problem with respect to a vehicle backing out of either driveway. This is contrary to fact because the panel members had already been made aware that the county traffic engineer said the proposed fence would not compromise sight distance. So Mr. Brennan either forgot the county traffic engineer's ruling or he chose to ignore it. Within about 4 seconds of Mr. Brennan's remarks, all other panel members voted in lockstep agreement with Mr. Brennan. This suggested that there was no independent deliberation by the other panel members. To summarize, I have pointed out reversible errors of fact and judgment with respect to the Planning Commission's consideration of this matter. It should also be noted that the completely different reasons for rejection in the first and second hearings suggests that opinions of the Planning Commission can be capricious and callous. Their decisions may not be based upon principles of fairness and accuracy, nor does the Commission display empathy for the needs of persons whose fate they rule upon. Thank you.
Dr. Rayner.
Dr.
Rayner.
I'd like to respond to Mr. O'Brien's question.
I'm going to ask you.
If I may.
I'm going to say this, that this board is aware. We read the minutes of the Planning Commission, so these people are appointed by this board, so we have dialogue with them and understand what has already happened. So this is not new information. And they also are making a recommendation. They don't make the final decision. And so with the facts of the case are apparent to us, as well as the appearance of this fence. We've got the visual arts here that describe more than words what the fence is. So we have that information. And so we'll make our judgment based upon what we hear and see tonight.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions for Mr. Dr. Rayner? We'll get you the opposition yet. Okay, are you through, sir? Are you through, sir, with your...
Yes, I am. Unless Mr. O'Bannon wants a reply to the question she asked about alternatives to the fence.
Well,
I think that's been well described, and we know what the code says, and we know what the allowable request could be here.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And ma'am, you would like to speak?
Supervisor Cackley, board members, I respectfully appreciate your attention to this matter. I would like to show you two pictures.
Would you identify yourself for us?
I'm sorry. I'm Linda Marks. I'm the neighbor next door with the, quote, unsightly yard. I have had a problem with trespassing vandalism on my property. I have tried to settle it peacefully. I've tried not to go to civil court. I did finally get a warrant thinking that would stop it, and it doubled. And it finally did go to court. Now, the reason I objected to it the second time, when Dr. Raynard, he was found guilty beyond reasonable doubt of trespassing on my property. Now, I've tried to avoid the vandalism part. The judge has taken the matter under advisement for a year as long as Dr. Rayner remains off my property. Well, when I heard that, I thought no one is going to disobey a judge's order. I was incorrect. That just escalated. Dr. Rayner is on my property constantly. The wall that you see with the water, the unsightly picture that he showed, that's the wall that he put up. The land slopes from the side and from the back. The wall that's been installed has a footing, and it also appears to have concrete. I have pictures of that, too, covering up the little holes where things go through. I don't know whether that has to be there or not, but I know I get everybody's water from behind me, backs up on my property. My driveway has also been cut out and changed. I have pictures of that. This all started when Dr. Rayner dug a 12-by-12-inch ditch on my property. I didn't know who had done it. I went to try to fill it up because I didn't want to kill the trees. When I did, he came out and he said, well, I'll be removing that. And I was rather perplexed. And he said, that the ditch would stay. And I said, well, it's my property. And he knew it was my property. He knows the exact property line. I've had this property surveyed a good number of times because everything that happens is always an issue of the property line. I have had a new survey done, and I'll be glad to show you that if you'd like to see it. I guess it was about 8 years ago. I knew the Rainers before I moved there. I mean, we weren't close friends, but I knew them. It wasn't that we were in and out of each other's houses. I was in the house, I think, one time. But about the last 10 years, they have this addition that floods. It's flooded, or it has a water problem. I don't know whether you consider it flooding or not. And it has since the day it was built. Now, this addition has a building permit and an inspection as a garage. It's not a garage. It's never been a garage. It has wood on the front to look like a garage. That meaning neither here nor there. It was built flat on the ground. Now, I'm not claiming to know anything about building, but I would think on a slanted ground you'd have to build according to the grade of the land because I'd never had flooding problems. No one else had. The only one that I know of in the neighborhood is the person across the street who has a basement. And that kind of on that type of land, I think you would have a problem with the basement. But when about when I kept trying to fill the ditch to save the trees, because their roots were showing, I believe I have that picture with me too, I didn't realize we were going into this much detail. The trees were killed. The trees were in excellent condition. They had no foundation. They were swaying. I mean, they were ready to fall down. So I had to take responsibility as a property owner. They were on my property. Believe me, I did not want to pay to have trees cut down. That was not in my...
How long ago was this?
This was this past September. Now, the two trees that he killed...
The trees were dead?
The trees had no root system. They had no support because they were all cut when he did the 12-by-12-inch ditch. Then he told me later that a county inspector had been by and told him to move the ditch onto his property. And I said, great, and thank you. And he started digging that day, and I said, you know, it looks like you're doing it on my property. And he said, because I don't want any ditches on my property. And he said, no, when I get done, it's going to be on my property. It's not going to be on yours. Now, when we went to court, he told the judge that he had moved the ditch because I didn't like it where it was, and he thought I'd be more pleased with it in the new location. The issue is, I am the property owner. I deserve to have the property the way I want it, and I shouldn't have had to pay to have trees cut down. Now, he has continued to dump sand, rearrange my property, and he finally has it now until so all the water flows toward me and through the hills and valleys. It's really a pretty complicated structure. He has it going away from him. As it is, my backyard is so uneven, I can't even walk back there. Henrico, I paid to get the leaves done. There wasn't a leaf in the yard. I had done them. They kept coming back, and I, where are they coming from? You know, everybody had kind of gotten them up. So your volunteer, Wayne Slout, had a group come out, which I certainly appreciated, and they got up every single stick, everything. A few days later, it was small sticks everywhere. And I have seen him multiple times. I mean, he goes around his yard and he breaks up sticks and they're in my yard. I don't know why. But I'd like to show you the picture of my property when I put the new roof on it in January of 07. Because that was, and I'm not saying I was going to have a yard like a golf club.
Is this pertinent to the fence? Because
it's very pertinent since he said that he was putting it up in reference to the horrible shape of my property. I want to show you what my property looks like before he damaged
it. Ms. Marks, with all due respect, the Board of Supervisors is here to hear an appeal in reference to the installation of the fence on top of an existing brick area.
He brought up that his purpose was...
I appreciate, ma'am, what you're saying, that is a civil action between the two property owners. The purpose that he states or your states has nothing to do with the ordinances, which is the consideration of the Board of Supervisors.
Well, I thought so, too, but since he stated that, I thought you wanted to hear that, too. I will tell you what I told the original committee. Dr. Rayner has been found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
It has nothing to do with the case before the board, ma'am.
What it has to do with it is that he would have to come on my property.
It has nothing to do with what's before the Board of Supervisors, which in essence is a request to install a fence. I would suggest and request respectfully that if you have comments or concerns, they must relate to the fence question, which is before the board, not your interaction or activities with your neighbor.
Well, Mr. Manager, he did say he gave one of the reasons that he wanted the fence was to obscure the view of the adjacent property. He did say that.
He did?
And the view is
We have pictures, and we've seen the situation.
But you could
perhaps comment why you object to the fence as the fence itself.
Yeah.
I think it would be an issue. I mean, he would have to maintain the fence, right. And legally that would be an issue. when he put in the wall, it did change the slope of the land, and it's caused a real problem for me. And he continues to trespass on the land, which has nothing to do with this.
Don't you think that...
The sloping of the land, changing the slope, is what's caused the way it looks right now. My major concern with the fence is the visibility and the safety. I think we always have to have safety as a top priority. Now, I have
safety of what nature?
Well, when you pull out these this is an older neighborhood, so the streets aren't that wide, and it's a very dark neighborhood. When you pull out your driveway, it will block the visibility. You can't see from the side, so you're not going to be able to see until you get to the end. Now, the neighborhood is changing from an older population to a younger population, so we have children there. And as we all know, children, you know, frequently run out and without thinking in front of a driveway.
Okay.
It would be very hard by looking, when you can see all the way down, you can tell what's going on.
Well,
now, when the traffic engineers were there, that was during the day. Now, at night, some of these driveways are filled up all the way. And
all right. I might point out something to you, Ms. Marks. If you look at the illustration on the screen here.
Yeah, I did.
Yes, and you see a vehicle in your driveway sticking up above the fence, that the windows from your automobile will be above the level of this fence. And so visibility has not been determined to be any issue in this case, because the elevation of your driveway is up uphill from the fence. I mean, the grade goes up, and so it consequently gives you an advantage of seeing over the top.
Well, it affects me as well as all of those.
Excuse me?
It would affect anybody further up as well.
Well, nobody else is going to be coming out of your driveway.
Well, I mean, I want to be able to see before I get to the end of the road.
No, I think there's 11-foot clearance beyond this fence to the roadway.
And I do have I have multiple sclerosis, so I have a lift on the back of my SUV,
right,
which extends further out. So that comes
okay.
Further out into the yard. I am concerned about safety.
All right. Well, so are we.
And when you can see through the whole, you know, through the yard, you can anticipate if someone's coming out, if children are going to be playing, you know, what's going on. But when that's closed off, you can't anticipate that.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask the traffic engineer? I'd like to hear him tell me that's a safe
area. All right, yes,
okay?
Please.
And I think that'll put it to rest, okay?
We know what's in the report.
I know. I just want to hear him say it.
Let's traffic engineer.
I've debated it now for about 10 minutes, and I think if he said tells us, I think that'd put it to rest.
All right.
Well.
But could I have a traffic engineer to tell me what he thinks?
Sure.
Traffic engineer.
You can say that, Ms. Bond.
Mr. Glover, the column that is existing right now is 11, the face of that column is 11 foot 6 from the pavement edge of Fond du Lac to that column, and that meets...
All I need to know, is it safe?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. Mrs. Marks, do you have anything else you'd like to advise the board of, any concerns?
And you've been out there in the evening when...
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that... We put this to rest. I think the traffic engineer, I'm not going to go against what the traffic engineer said.
No, but I didn't know if she had any more comments she wanted to make. Do you have any further comments pertaining to that?
It's also giving him further sheltering.
Yes.
And continue to come on my property.
Well, you know, maybe a fence is a good thing to prevent trespassing up.
But it's open on both ends. It's open. I mean, it's just an open
the fence?
Wall. It's not a fence that's going all the way back. It's just an open wall.
He has to go over it to get to your lot?
It's the front and the back are open. I mean, just yesterday he was kneeling.
Well, it would be 50,
something on my property.
52 inches high if it's constructed there. Is it 56? And then he'd have to go over that, wouldn't he?
Mr. Chairman, all due respect to Mrs. Marks and to you as a chairman and to your district, these are items that are civil items, and it has nothing to do with the fence.
Okay.
I realize what she's saying, but the open end on both ends has nothing to do with the fence.
Right.
So, you know, she has any... I can sympathize that she doesn't want a fence, but...
Okay.
Excuse me. It's not in reference to the fence. It's in reference to the fact that he is the one that caused the damage to my property, and he's using my...
Again, that goes back to a civil suit that she's already been in court, and I think that's where it has to go, and I don't think we're supposed to hear those kind of cases.
No. Okay.
My understanding that when you have a fence, you're supposed to maintain the fence on the other side, and he's not supposed to be on my property.
Well, you don't... Well, that's another issue. If you don't want him over there to maintain it, then maybe...
It's not that I don't want him over there. The judge has said he's not come on my property.
Well, if you can't come on it, okay. Well, that's another issue, too. We're going to move on and
thank you.
Make a decision. Thank you.
I would like to at least see you get up, that, you know, when you go by and you've got someone on my property.
Okay. Well, maybe the court will have to decide that. Mr. O'Kelly, let me ask you one other question for us. There was a permit issued to put in the foundation, right? And it's met the criteria. And do you know if the land was altered at all?
There was no building permit required to build a 22-inch knee wall, Mr. Cacklin.
Well, there's no prevent.
No, sir.
I thought there was. Okay. All right. Okay. Is there any other testimony we need? No, I think you've already had your chance, so I think it's time for the board to make a decision. Knowing this is a very controversial neighborhood situation that it's difficult for the two of you to deal with and to try to thrust us in the middle is even more difficult for us. But looking at the merits of this case and the testimony that we've seen from the staff and the fact that the fence does not create any safety issues. It's an attractive fence, an expensive fence. I think it. In fact, there's been neighborhood support for the fence, and it has no real negative effect on the community, all right, on the neighborhood. So it's my recommendation that the board grant this appeal and allow this fence to be constructed. So if there's a motion to that effect,
Mr. Hayes, do you have a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, not knowing which way the board was going on this, we prepared two papers. The paper which is on the agenda, vote in the affirmative, would approve the decision of the Planning Commission, which was denied. I have for your consideration also a substitute resolution that I've labeled 103A-08. The difference between the original resolution, which I've mentioned, and this substitute resolution is that the substitute reverses the Planning Commission decision and grants the applicant's right for the alternative fence height. If you would like to entertain a motion for a substitute, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that you call, sir, for the motion.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move we substitute resolution 103A-08 for resolution 103-08.
That's just a substitute. Okay.
Yes.
The motion to substitute these papers made by Mr. Glover.
Second
by Mr. Donati. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed no?
No.
Okay, and then a motion.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, roll call vote, Mr. Clark.
Aye. Aye.
No.
Aye.
The motion does pass with one no,
So at this point, Mr. Chairman, you do have a substitute motion. Approval of the substitute motion would grant the alternative fence height.
All right.
That is Resolution 103A-08, which you will now have to consider.
Okay, is there a motion to that effect?
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve substitute Resolution 103A-08.
All right, motion by Mr. Glover. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Donati. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
Okay, we can have another roll call.
Aye. Aye.
No.
Aye.
And I would like to explain my vote. I believe we don't need to set precedent here, and it's against public good to grant this case for an alternative fence height. I believe the original fence height, or what's allowed legally and technically now, would be sufficient. Extra shrubbery could be added. There are alternatives to changing the fence height. I feel this is an arbitrary decision. It's against public.
Well, we'll accept your opposition, Ms. O'Bannon. There is precedent, however, that the Planning Commission has approved a number of alternate.
But all other fence heights that in the cases we've seen have been with cases to keeping a dog, an animal, and they are more open fences. I have a concern about this because of the reasons given by the two parties. I do have a concern that it could be handled in a better way than altering the fence height.
Okay, let's move on.
Next item, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, 104-08 is a resolution. This is signatory authority. This is the Third Amendment to the lease. This is approximately 5/10 of an acre with improvements at 4810 Allen Shaw Drive. Before Mr. Price presents his paper to you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, prior to us coming downstairs, I indicated to you that this was a lease agreement. The County of Enrico actually owns this home at 4810 Allen Shaw, and we lease the property to the Community Services Board. So we will retain ownership and use probably as a mental health home. Mr. Price.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Manager, the county has leased to Community-Based Services the dwelling at 4810 Allen Shaw Drive on a year-to-year basis. In January of this year, they gave us notice that they did not wish to renew for another year, but as they're looking for a new location, but they did ask that they could change the lease to a month-to-month basis while they are securing their new location. This paper is recommended by the Department of Mental Health Retardation Services annual property. This would give the county manager signatory authority to amend the lease to a month-to-month basis.
Okay. Any questions about board members? Motion be in order.
Move resolution.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Denai and second by Ms. O'Bannon to approve the resolution. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh, no. Okay.
Item 105-08 is an ordinance. This is a vacation of a portion of a drainage and utility easement, lot 16 and reserved area in Block D, East Haven Village in the Verona District. Mr. Price?
Approval of this ordinance will vacate a portion of the 16-foot drainage and utility easement across lot 16 in the reserved area in Block D, East Haven Village at 2611 Bromley Street. David and Lisa Sharman are the owners and have requested to get vacation in order to construct a garage on lot 16. There are no county facilities in the area to be vacated and no future use is anticipated. The real property department has processed this request through planning, public works, and public utilities without objection.
Okay. Any questions by board members?
Those ordinance.
This is a public hearing. Anybody in the audience would like to comment or have questions? All right. Mr. Donati, you have a motion?
Yes.
Approve the ordinance.
Second.
Mr. Donati, second by Ms. O'Bannon, approve the ordinance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay. Now we're down to that portion. That's the last public hearing, right?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman. You do have public comments, and I do have one individual who remains to be signed up under this portion of your public hearing agenda. She did speak earlier during the budget public hearing, and that is Catherine Lawson.
She's still here.
Thank you. Members of the board and staff and citizens of Henrico, appreciate the opportunity to speak at this late hour. I'm still awake. It was a real glorious moment when I drove into the driveway tonight and I met Brian Montgomery, who serves the county. An individual with a disability got out of the lift-equipped van after regular hours, which was the program that you funded. And I want to urge you to continue to appoint individuals from different cultures to serve on your boards and commissions in Henrico County, because we have a really diverse county. A lot of immigrants, new immigrants, a lot of people with disabilities, and more individuals with disabilities are going to be living in community, and they're going to want to make contributions. So I strongly urge you to appoint them as you deliberate these new generations of young people coming out of high school. I also want to share with you that I spent the last couple of days at a conference, a Virginia Elder Rights and Guardianship Association conference, also sponsored by the Virginia Boards of People with Disabilities and other DMHMR, SAS, and DUNAS, other state agencies. And they had a couple of very interesting workshops that I wanted to share with you. The plenary first opening speaker is Michael Gillette from UVA, and he spoke about the ethics related to the pandemic flu. And you may recall this year, Henrico County became a substantive leader in having an all-day conference on pandemic flu. And I just appreciate your leadership on this issue. And that when we meet again in Henrico County, we might have a speaker like Michael Gillette, because there's going to be a lot of issues related to how we make our decisions in immunizations, which populations are going to get the immunizations first, and how some vulnerable populations really need to get the heads up in the risks that we will all take, and how we have to secure ourselves and prepare ourselves for the pandemic flu, which is coming. So I just appreciate the county paying attention to that and informing your residents on an ongoing manner. The second issue that I want the public to be aware of relates to parents of young individuals with disabilities who are coming out of high school. We call that transitioning. And like the young lady who spoke earlier this evening, who's 21 years old, when she's 22 years old, she will no longer fall within the educational system. And a lot of families look forward to how are they going to help their children transition and be integrated in community. So there was a speaker from the Virginia Housing and Development Authority, whose name is Dr. Bill Fuller, and he spoke about a new initiative that VHDA is involved in. And it's where parents of young people with disabilities or other people, Medicaid waiver candidates who want to live in community, the parents can actually come together and form a micro board, incorporate as an entity, and purchase property and receive low and no interest long-term loans to operate and manage properties. So children who have or young adults who befriended each other can actually live together in a multifamily dwelling. And I just wanted Henrico residents to get the heads up on this, because it's very frustrating for parents of young people with disabilities as they transition. How are they going to reach full independence and self-determination and live in the community like so many able-bodied young people? You know, they go to college and they get a residence and they live independently. So there are going to be a lot of new options coming down the road, and I just want you to be aware that I'm willing to share that over time with the board of supervisors, some of the new developments taking place at the state level, including the housing, because housing has been the most difficult area to address affordable housing for people with disabilities who are going to be increasingly living in community. So I thank you for your time this evening at this late hour to hear my public comment.
Okay, thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Manager, isn't that the type of thing that Parents for Community-Based Services works on? Nita Grignall was sitting in the audience.
Yes, I know Nita from a lot of the public policy work that I have done.
And type of issue. And Mr. Drumlight, you might know more actual details, but they work on this a lot. That's what their organization does, Parents for Community-Based
Services. This is a whole new day for VHDA with this program, Informing Microboards. They probably haven't gotten wind of it yet, but I'm sure they'll be learning, and they would be advised, well, probably to call Bill Fuller at VHDA, because VHDA actually funded the formation of a microboard, which is a little nonprofit. So it will save our residents their dimes and nickels, you know, mm-hmm. to get the state involved.
And I know the manager mentioned during the budget hearings about the providing the funding for the kids that are transitioning or the young adults that are transitioning in that
mm-hmm.
program for job opportunities. And we fund how many? There are 20, 30 a year or something?
Actually, it's 19 this year.
19 this year.
That's great.
That we're funding.
Thank you for your investment in our citizens.
That transition.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Manager, we've got a general agenda here, a few items to go.
We do, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Under your general agenda, the first item is 106-08. This is a resolution. It's authorization to apply for and accept a continuation grant for the Victim Witness Assistance Program, which is in the Commonwealth Attorney's Office. This authorizes the manager to apply for and accept a continuation grant for this year, which totals $327,509 for fiscal year 09. There is a match from the county, $325,160. It also authorizes the application for a continuation grant for the next year, 2010. This resolution is necessary for me to make application on behalf of the Commonwealth Attorney's Office.
Move resolution.
Okay. Moved by Mr. Glover.
Second.
Second by Ms. O'Bannon. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Resolution carries.
Item 107-08 is a resolution for signatory authority. This is an agreement with the County School Board of Henrico County to allow the school board participation in the county's other post-employment benefits trust. As you recall, I mentioned this to you. This is OPEB, GASB 45. This is required by state law, which in essence permits an agreement between the school board and Henrico County. Between the school board and the Board of Supervisors. If you approve this resolution, they will be in a form acceptable to the county attorney, and this will allow the school board to participate.
Move the resolution.
Second.
Move by Ms. O'Bannon, second by Mr. Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The resolution carries.
Item 108-08 is a resolution. This is authority to submit the Henrico County plan for the Virginia Juvenile Community Crime Control Act.
Move resolution.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Glover, second by Ms. O'Bannon. Approve resolution. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Item 109-08 is a resolution. This is for the acceptance of a